I'm Gene Nucho from the University of Colorado Denver, Anschutz Medical Center. My colleagues on this study, Angela Richard and David Hittle, also from the university, and William Butchko, who is from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, who was the project officer and funding agent for this particular project. As I mentioned earlier, we're faculty, so we don't get paid, and contrary to popular belief, we don't do drugs either. Our research question was part of the evaluation of the pay-for-performance program for home health. Pay-for-performance is a technique that the government is considering to reduce costs or to at least enhance higher quality costs. And so we were looking at evaluating a two-year study starting in 2008, 570 agencies in the country were volunteered to participate. They were divided into two groups, treatment group that was eligible for bonuses based on their performance, that is high performance on seven of the outcome measures that are publicly reported, or significant improvement in those outcomes. The data that I'm going to be discussing today are the 2008 data that we have from a web-based survey from that was offered to all 570 of the agencies. We are currently gathering the data on 2008, and I have some preliminary results from them that are not displayed, but I might be referencing them. Again, the seven outcome measures are two utilization measures, acute care hospitalization and any emergent care. These are based on the OASIS data set that's given to all patients in home health when they start care and when they're discharged from care and every 60 days if they're on care for that period of time. And five functional improvement areas, you'll notice that are targeted to the ADLs. First, are there any representatives from OMB in here? Good. Our web-based survey was an attempt to make life very easy for our agencies. There was a 20-item survey for the treatment agencies and a shortened version for the control agencies. I submitted it, and 18 months later, I had it approved. Okay. Someone asked me in the focus groups this morning why I only did eight agencies, and that's because the magic number is 10. So I didn't have to have OMB approval. A 20-item survey, because we had one open thing, and three demographics, you know, like the name of the agency. 18 months. Don't do it. It was forced choice. We had some pre-filled questions. As I said, one open-ended. We did cognitive testing for these. We focused on areas of staffing, policy, practice, and external measures, and the impact. Okay, so we sent out the cover letters and directions in September. We remailed and returned packages that were incorrect address. We had monthly emails, reminders through January. So we took the Dillman approach and badgered them. And we ended up with a pretty good sample of the treatment group. So the 281 agencies, we had 41% return rate. For the control, we had 103 for a 36% return rate. Our questions were what differences were attributable to the demonstration occurred in organizational policies and clinical practices. That basically, we were trying to distinguish between our treatment group and our control group. That is, if we found performance differences in APT Associates, which did the payment portion of this, found some in three regions of the country, in the New England region, Massachusetts and Connecticut, in the Southeast, Alabama, Tennessee, and Georgia, and in California, there was a significant difference in the amount of utilization of services between the treatment group and the control group, and it was in the right direction. That is, the treatment group agencies, their patients used on a per-person basis, per-patient basis, less resources. So those monies were shared with those agencies. In Illinois, which was the Midwest region, there was no difference between the two. In fact, the control group was less than the treatment group, and so those agencies received a little nice little letter electronically mailed, most of which they didn't find in their electronic mailbox, saying, thank you very much for your great care, and there's no money. All right, so what kinds of differences did we find in terms of the control versus the agent, in terms of staffing? Control agencies were generally more likely to add staff functions that than treatment agencies. So you can see that the control agencies increased staff 45% versus the treatment only 35%. Now, the turnover numbers are completely misleading, so please let me know. I'll let you know. 62% of the RN staff did not turn over. We asked the question incorrectly, despite OMB's 18-month review. We simply asked the question: Did you have any turnover in your RN staff? The answer was, of course. When I redesigned the survey for year two, I didn't ask OMB. We gave them some ranges, and what we found, and this is what I wanted to share with you, is that almost 50% of the agencies, either control or treatment, report no turnover. That is less than 5% turnover in their staff. At 32% report somewhere between 6 and 20% turnover in their RN staff. So the real number is not 67 or 62% turnover for RNs. The real number is somewhere in the order of maybe 8 to 10%. In terms of what functional areas did they add assistance, again, there you can see that there's virtually no difference between the treatment and control groups. And in fact, many of these results are not statistically significant. But, you know, I thought they were interesting anyway. What kind of external support? Here's a very valuable piece of policy information. More than half the treatment of the control agencies received assistance in reducing acute care hospitalization from the QIOs. Notice that assistance to home health agencies was taken out of the scope of work for QIOs, I believe, in 2008 or 2009. So this was prior work that the QIOs, the agencies very much liked the support they got from QIO organizations. So again, policy. More than 50% of the agencies were part of a larger corporate, more than 50% of the agencies that were part of a larger corporate organization received corporate help to reduce acute care hospitalization and emergency care. What we're talking about here are chains. There are not as many chain groups in home health as there are in nursing home, but some groups like Amedisys are buying up large chunks of the population in terms of home health. Again, you can see that they're very much targeted toward reducing hospitalization and ER usage. Both treatment and control home health agencies do report staff availability, competition, and government policies as concerns. Notably, there was a, because of the change in the way prospective payment has been targeting therapies, there's been an increased demand in PTs and OTs. And because there was an increase in demand in PTs and OTs, they're harder to find. When OASIS was first implemented, it was reported by a national organization that OASIS was the death knell of it was driving nurses out of the profession. Now they're driving PTs and OTs, apparently, out of the profession. Anyway, that's an issue. Treatment home health agencies are more likely than control agencies to implement a policy to increase quality or quality of communication with patients. So you can see that the quality of presentation right here, 50% versus 40%. Control agencies were more likely to increase productivity requirements. 31% of our of the control agencies increase productivity. In other words, go see more patients versus the treatment agencies. The about half of the treatment agencies and half of the treatment control or both groups reported that they've implemented performance improvement programs, additional record review activities, or they changed the visit patterns. Again, changing visit patterns, in other words, front-loading visits, was a strategy that most agencies have identified as a significant way of reducing hospitalization and reducing ER visits. It's, again, one of the recommendations from the QIO program. And you can see that the percentages are pretty high in terms of those strategies. So here's some more visit pattern kinds of things. Fall preventions was the second most prevalent item. And again, given that the new OASIS is going to focus on various kinds of processes, and one of those processes that they're supposed to be implementing is a fall prevention program, you'll probably see that value increase also. Now here's, again, finance. What did this cost the agencies in order to participate and pay for performance? That is, the concern was that agencies would be wildly spending money so that they could get these bonuses from the government. Well, what happened? More than half of the agencies said there's essentially no change in the cost of their delivery of services because of the whole pay for performance. When we looked at cost reports, that was corroborated. So the problem of pay for performance driving up costs is not supported here. What did they believe the demonstration would do? The largest belief, the most groups, almost 72%, believe that the improvement in oral meds, and certainly all the presentations we've had on pharmacy and pharmacy problems, certainly that bodes well. Again, almost 70% looked at acute care hospitalization. Interestingly, since the start of Home Health Compare in 2003, the rate of hospitalization has essentially not changed. While the rates of improvement in the functional measures has improved on the average of about between 10 and 30%. What did they dislike about the home health, the pay for performance program? The issue here has been no feedback. That is, the agencies in 2007 volunteered. They received a letter from APT Associates and CMS saying, you are part of the treatment group, you are eligible for your for a potential bonus, again, if you have high scores in terms of these functional measures, or if you had substantial improvement. The control group said, thank you very much, you're in the control group. Literally, almost 2 years later, okay, a check appeared in their bank account, and they said, you know, and in many cases, when we were doing the second year evaluation, about 40% of the agencies who were in the treatment group who were eligible said, we had no idea why we got this money, okay? And I mean, they're so we obviously need to do a little better job advertising, you know, that hey, you can earn something here. In terms of the number of awards by the responders in this group, you can see that in Massachusetts and Connecticut, we had a fairly high response rate from the winners versus no response. The non-award winners, okay, the those that didn't respond had a lower number of, on average, of values. Illinois was about even, California was about even, and we had some really strange things going on in the South. The responders had won in Alabama about 2.6 awards versus two, whereas in Tennessee, the responders were the non-winner types as opposed to that. So again, it was kind of interesting. What did we find? There's few differences that we've been able to establish so far between the treatment and the control group. We're redoing the survey with both the treatment group, the winners, the non-winners, and the control group, and hopefully have those results next year. The treatment group emphasized communication among patients, physicians, and staff. They emphasized prevention and screening programs. They emphasize telehealth and telemedicine, and they change the visit patterns. Control agencies emphasize staff productivity, changes in patient visit mix. That is, that they now saw a real value in team, so they would go in with a cluster of PTs, OTs, and RNs. They emphasize wound care protocols, electronic communication with discharge patients. There's minimal impact in terms of cost. There's a strong impact in terms of outcomes and quality, and the strong buy-in from the staff. Thank you.